This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
All right. What's going on, everybody? This is Jay from Sub 70. Just want to give a quick introduction to this episode of the podcast. Earlier this week, Jason and I were fortunate enough to attend the Rust-Oleum Championship Media Day. The Rust-Oleum Championship is a web.com tour event that takes place at the Ivanhoe Club June 7th through 10th. Ivanhoe is up in Mundelein, Illinois. If you live in the Chicago area and you are interested in professional golf or just seeing some of the best up-and-coming golfers on the planet, we highly recommend checking it out. It's about 40 miles from downtown Chicago. Pretty easy to get to. I've been to the event myself and certainly would recommend it to anyone that's interested in golf. It is definitely a very fun environment, fun golf course to watch tournament on, and we certainly look forward to attending ourselves. You can check out the website and get more information on the tournament at rustoleumchampionship.com. Our interview for this episode of the podcast is with Nick Hardy. Nick is an incredibly accomplished college golfer at the University of Illinois. He is coming off of his second individual title in Big Ten play and is a team member on a four-time defending champion team for the Big Ten. Jason talked to Nick a little bit about his time at U of I, his thoughts and relationship with Coach Small, and what makes Coach Small such a great mentor and leader for the golf program there. Also talked to him about qualifying for multiple U.S. Opens as an amateur, shooting a ridiculous 28 under in a four-round tournament at St. Charles Country Club, and also looked forward to NCAA regionals, finals, and eventually his transition to professional golf, which will take place at the Rust-Oleum Championship in just about a month. So a very crazy time and hectic time right now for Nick as far as golf goes and some transitioning in his life. We definitely appreciate him taking the time to join us and talk a little bit about that. And hopefully we will see him out at Ivanhoe in a month, and maybe he'll even be hoisting the trophy in his professional debut. We definitely appreciate the time. Here is the interview.
Well, I would like to welcome to the Sub 70 podcast, All-American at the University of Illinois and soon-to-be professional, Nick Hardy, to the podcast. Nick, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, first, I would like to thank you for the birdie that you made for our team at the media day for the web.com event, the Rust-Oleum Championship in Chicago at Ivanhoe Golf Club, which I know you'll be turning professional and playing in. You definitely helped the team, and it was fun to see you out there with us. And, hey, thanks for helping the team overall.
Yeah, no, I'm just doing my best for you guys. Try to get everyone to birdie out there.
So you're turning pro for this event at the Rust-Oleum Championship in Chicago at Ivanhoe, like I said. And how excited are you to be turning professional near the area where you grew up, to kind of do it in your hometown? And what's your thoughts overall on the golf course, and how familiar are you with that track?
Right, yeah, no, it's going to be very special to be able to make my pro debut so close to home. You know, it's only about a half an hour drive, and it's a course that I'm very familiar with. I mean, a few years back, I qualified for USAM on it, and I actually played in this tournament as an amateur 2 years ago. So I have some good experience on this course, and, it's a great course, one of the great courses around Chicago, and it's going to be very special to have a lot of, big home crowd out there, hopefully.
And before that tournament, though, starts, we have another big one coming up at the NCAA Championships. How pumped are you to get to Carston Creek and kind of, bring home potentially a national championship for the University of Illinois?
No, yeah, I'm very excited. This is my last run at a national title with my team. First things first, we got regionals coming up next week at Ohio State's home course, and We got to qualify there first, but we're familiar with that course. We played Ohio State's home tournament a few weeks ago there, so should be exciting, and we get a crack at number one team, Oklahoma State, over there too.
Have you played Carson Creek before, and if you have, what's sort of your thoughts on the track?
I actually haven't, but I know teammates who have, and I know people have talked about the course, but I've heard it's a difficult driving course, difficult course overall, and I'm sure we're going to be expecting some weather, like probably lots of wind, and you never know what to expect down there, but looking forward to hopefully having some tough conditions and a tough golf course. I feel like my game thrives in that condition and difficulty.
Speaking of your game, how are you doing right now? Do you feel like you're kind of peaking for the next couple of weeks? Is there anything you're working on, or how comfortable are you overall of where you're sort of at?
No, yeah, I'm very comfortable where I'm at. I think I've got to a good place on the golf course mentally, where I'm not really thinking about mechanics. I'm just going out there and playing the game, playing what the course gives me, and I think I'm managing my game very well, and my control of my emotions out there pretty well. So I think I'm in a good place right now.
Speaking of your game, like I said, you got a few college tournaments left and you're turning pro. When your golf game is on, what do you do best? And then on the flip side of, you have played in some PGA Tour events, you played in some major championships. As a young, soon-to-be young professional, what do you think you still need to work on to kind of get your game to that next level once you turn
right
professional?
I think when I'm playing my best, I'm driving the ball really well, and I'm putting the ball really well. I think that those are really the keys of the game. You gotta drive in the fairway, and you gotta make your putts on the green. You gotta start and finish, and I think those are two of the things that I'm doing really well when I'm playing well. And you gotta add in the mental side of it. I think when things are going well, I'm highly confident, and I'm positive out there, extremely positive. But for what I need to work on going to the next level, I think it's my wedge game, and I think anywhere from 40 to 100 yards. I think that's really the bread and butter of the game too. I think you obviously see the guys who aren't long hitters out there, they have to have good wedge games, but really everyone's got to have good wedge games out there to make the birdies that you need to make to keep up.
When you've been playing in PGA Tour events or the majors, are you amazed of how good, relatively speaking, obviously you guys can play, you're playing at a high level of D1 golf, but are those pros that you've played with at a different level of how good they are from, say, 120 yards and in, for the most part?
Oh, yeah. Of course they're at a different level, but I think really it's just the way that they handle their games and how well they know their games. I think, they don't make little mistakes out there that college players tend to make. They their mistakes are unforced errors, but they aren't because they aren't due to pre-shot routine or, usually – course management, they're due to just poor shots. And those happen out there, but they know their game so well, and they play to their strengths out there. I think really a lot of it has to do with just the experience alone and just, knowing their games and knowing what, their limits out there. I think, obviously they're very talented, and there's a lot of talent in the D1 golf game, but I think, the pros just, the way they manage and the way they're able to score even on their bad days, I think that's what separates them.
Well, speaking of tour players, your current coach, soon to be former coach, but Coach Mike Small, played professional golf at a really high level. And from when you started as a freshman to where you're at now, what has Coach Small brought to your game? And is his consistency of the teams he puts together, do you think a lot of that has to do in the fact that he has been at a really high level and played at a very high level and can kind of mold you guys mm-hmm. into the players that that you can be, and he believes in you as well? So I know it's kind of long-winded, but what does he sort of bring to the table, and what improvements have you seen from, let's say, your start to where you're at now, and what does he sort of bring to the table?
Yeah, I think obviously it's very impressive what Coach Small has done over the past decade in this program. I think people are most amazed at how he's able to get as much as he can out of his guys that he recruits. I mean, I'm not, going to say that he recruits bad players, but he doesn't recruit the top of the court or the recruiting class every year. He's recruiting, guys that kind of fit his MO, I think, which is guys who want to get better, who want to, have aspirations of being a professional golfer one day. and, you know, guys that are willing to work hard and work for it and, you know, listen and trust him on it, because obviously there's so much reason to trust him with him playing in, I think, 13 or 14 major championships, and he's, you know, cleaned up on Illinois PGA, and he's won many tournaments on, you know, professionally himself. So obviously his success alone on the course, he's been around the world. He knows so much about the professional game that, you know, any sort of advice that, you know, he has is the truth, and he's willing to give you the truth and nothing but the truth. And I think that's what's the best thing about him. He's not going to shy away and, you know, nitpick at what he says to you. He's going to go directly at you and say the truth, no matter, you know, how much it hurts. And I think that's really the key in a coach. And Coach Jamal is so good at just, you know, laying the groundwork for a freshman when he comes in and seeing, you know, the major things that he needs to work on, so that by the time he's a senior, he's rocking and rolling. And I think, you know, so much is owed to Coach for all the players he's had. And I think all the players, you know, I think every single player has the utmost respect for Coach. I think it's pretty cool to see, you know, all the, when the program comes back together and all these players come back and visit, you know, how much respect they have for the program and Coach.
So there is some tough love sometimes where if he says, if he sees something he doesn't like in your game, he doesn't hold back. He will say,
I think that's a commonality in all the best coaches in the world. I think you see that in, you know, Greg Popovich. I think you see that in Bill Belichick. I think you see that in all the great, any manager, any coach, all the coaches have that. They you got to tell their players the truth. You can't sugarcoat anything. You can't tell them how good they are. You got to sometimes have some tough love in order to get better. And that's exactly what a player needs, even though some players don't want that.
You know, and how cool is it too, right? I mean, he's a coach and then playing the Champions Tour part-time, he's out there and he's still really competitive. Like I said, guys have to have, like, here's our coach who that's his main job, and yet on the side, he's still highly competitive at the highest level at the 50-plus circuit. Like I said, I can't imagine what that does for knowing that you're dealing with one of the best around, right? Like, the talent level that must take for Coach Small to coach and then go be able to play competitively, probably with not all the practice he wants to be able to do, and still be able to be that good. It's amazing.
You just said it. The practice that he has. I mean, he doesn't practice. It's just because of all the work he has to do with being a coach and a father and his family, and, you know, how dedicated he is to getting us better. I think it's pretty impressive how much he has on his plate, and he's still able to play at a high level with the little amount of practice that he has. That's the most impressive part about it. Is he won't practice for a week, come out and shoot 66 with us, and like it's no big deal. But you know, obviously he'll have his rust, but it's impressive that he's able to do that.
So the coach can still beat the students sometimes.
Oh yeah.
It's awesome.
even though he asks for shots, he still beats us straight up.
Well, speaking of golf again, like how did you start playing, and who introduced you to the game, and how did you kind of fall in love with it?
Yeah, my dad got me into the game when I started walking. I can remember swinging plastic clubs around the backyard. When I was 3, 4, and 5 years old, I think I got my first set of clubs when I was 6 or 7, and would play Annisburg, which is a par 3 course in Northbrook. I grew up on that course, playing that course a million times. My grandpa also has played golf forever, and he's got me into the game a lot too. He's a member up at Crystal Downs Country Club in Frankfort, Michigan, which is one of the top courses in the world. And I had the benefit of going up there every summer and playing, and I definitely owe it, most of it, to my dad and grandpa.
During your amateur career in high school or whatnot, when did the reality that you're going to be playing at a high level D1 program start to look like it's going to be a reality?
Honestly, it's funny because I never really thought about college golf when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school. I just wanted to play for the love of the game and play for my teammates in high school. And, you know, obviously schools wanted me to come visit my sophomore and junior year. And I didn't really even still want to think about college because I knew I still had a couple years of high school left. But I started, you know, really knowing that I was going to go play college golf and probably my sophomore year of high school. And it was definitely my dream all throughout my childhood to be a professional golfer and go somewhere for college golf. But it never really crossed my mind where I wanted to go to school until I took a couple of visits to Illinois, and that's when I knew for sure, you know, it was the only option that I wanted.
So there was no other D1 programs that you were seriously considering after you went down there and sort of visited it?
I was considering other Big Ten schools, and I was considering, you know, going on a trip down south to visit many schools the winter of my junior year, but in the fall of my junior year, I knew that it wouldn't matter. I wanted to go to Illinois.
Well, not a bad place to wind up with what you've done there, and, you know, hopefully one more final run here of a hell of a finish. So I think you made a good choice. 2015, you earn your way into the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. What was that qualifying process like and the pressure that goes into that? And how satisfying was it just to get through that qualifying gauntlet to kind of play in your first major?
It was a crazy run. I mean, that year, 2015, I had to go through locals as well. I qualified at Flossmoor for locals in Illinois, and then I went to Springfield, Ohio for that sectional, and, you know, that was my first time there. But, you know, if you don't know, Springfield Country Club in Ohio has the craziest greens ever. I mean, they're all back to front. It's an old school course. I mean, everything is pretty crazy with the greens being, you know, 11 or 12. I mean, they're flying when you're above the pin. You know, it was quite an experience for me, but I remember in that first one I qualified for at Springfield, I putted really well. And that's really what got me through onto Chambers Bay, and it was a great experience for me, and qualifying was very satisfying. But, you know, I kind of reset the goal, and I ended up making the cut, which was pretty cool too.
What did you think of Chambers Bay overall? Because there was all the controversy on the design, the greens. What was sort of your take from the actual architecture of the golf course?
I thought it was an unbelievable course from TD Green. I still love it. I went back there last year for the Pacific Coast Jam, and I love it because you got to be creative, and you can hit so many different shots close to the hole out there and be creative off slopes. And the, you know, I love the design. Obviously, you know, they took some heat for the greens out there. I think once they get the greens to where they want it to be, it's going to be one of the best courses in the country for sure, because I think the layout out there is so much fun to play.
So you made the cut that week, which is, you know, amazingly good for an amateur player. Did you get to play with any professionals that was a bit eye-opening, or anybody that experience was really, really, you know, for being in your first major and just a wonderful part of the week of getting to play with X, Y, or Z?
Honestly, that only really happened in the practice rounds. In the first two rounds, I played with a couple of guys that you probably never heard before. And then the third round, I played with Andy Pope. In the fourth round, I needed Ben Martin to shoot 82 or better. He was in the second to last group. I needed him to shoot 82 or better to play with Phil Mickelson, but he ended up shooting 86. And so Phil was in the group ahead of me that day. So I ended up playing, I think on Sunday, I played with Andy Pope. Saturday, actually, Bryson DeChambeau marked for me because I was in the first group alone. So in the practice rounds, I got to play with Zach Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Robert Streb, and also my teammate at the time, Brian Campbell. I also qualified for the Open that year. So I played with Brian in all my practice rounds as well.
Very cool. Growing up, who were sort of the guys that you idolized on the PGA Tour or tried to mimic your game after?
Well, for sure, Tiger Woods. I mean, I grew up right in that kind of prime time. You know, when I was about 10 years old, he was at the peak of his career. So, I mean, I definitely love Tiger Woods, and he's, you know, he's what made golf cool for me. I loved watching Tiger.
Yeah, it's good for the game to have him back and at least being competitive. Yep. It's, you know, it's fun to watch it. It's fun to kind of see what he can do sort of for Act Two here. So I think every player who loves golf, who's still at some level a golf fan, and it's, you want to see Tiger do well now. I mean, I'm sure you would love nothing more to get into a PGA Tour event and go like head to head with him, right? Like, would there be anything
better? That would
better?
Be unreal.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, like, nothing better than that.
Right. Like, coming down the last nine holes, was there anybody else you'd want to go against and see if the old man still has it against the new guys coming up? Right? I think that'd be awesome to see. So.
Yeah. And also see if the young gun still has it against The best of all time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the matchup is perfect. Like it, I think eventually we're going to see that, and there will be a young gun and a tiger, and they will come down to nine holes. I think it's going to be the most fascinating nine holes to watch the young guy versus the old legend and see what kind of, you know, who still has it at that point in time. I think it's going to be amazing, and it'll happen.
I think it's going to be awesome. I like Tiger's chances this week. It's surprising as it sounds. I like him this week at the Players.
Well, yeah, because, right, you don't have to hit a ton of drivers. He's still struggling a little bit with that, and he's hitting the stinger a little bit better, so it's sort of a placement golf course. I could see him doing well there.
I think he's very comfortable on Bermuda greens, and I know he hasn't had the best history at the Players, winning only twice there, but I still think that this week sets up well for him. I think he's going to play well there.
I would love to see him in the mix. You know, as a golf fan, it's in being in the golf business, it's good for business when Tiger's playing well. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
Oakmont 2016, you get back through the gauntlet again and you get to play historic Oakmont. What was your thoughts on that golf course and that whole experience? I know you didn't make the cut, but still it'd be pretty amazing to be out there.
No, yeah, I mean, Oakmont is probably one of my favorite golf courses I ever played, for sure, because it's such a fair test. It's insanely hard, but it's very fair still. I think it has about five shorter par fours that are, you know, under 390, and then it has, you know, five or at least five that are just driver four irons. I mean, it's a great great course, very fair. The way they set it up in the practice rounds was crazy, because the greens were very firm, and then Wednesday we got some rain, so that softened up everything. But if we didn't get that rain, nobody would have been under par, and Dustin would not have been under par for sure. I mean, it was a crazy difficult setup in the practice rounds, but you know, that rough is pretty crazy, and that was another great experience. I think I missed the cut by three, but it was another great one, and I was awesome. It was very satisfying to get back to the U.S. Open, you know, twice in a row. That was pretty cool.
Were you more comfortable the second time around? Like, imagine the first time you're playing in a major, there has to be, I don't want to say nerves, but, you know, you're super excited. It's got to be different than any other environment you've played in. As you do it for the second time, do you sort of, you know what you're going to go through, your body sort of adjust to that sort of...
Definitely.
But, I mean, yeah, what I'm trying to say, like, the, you know, it's not overwhelmed. I'm not saying you're going to be overwhelmed, but it's you're comfortable in that environment at that point.
Right, definitely. No, there's definitely, you know, that overwhelming factor. You know, the first US Open, I was just, like, kind of, like, in awe about everything, but the second one, I knew, you know, what it was going to be like, and knew kind of how to handle everything and spend another week and, you know, try to prepare the right way. I think that was, you know, pretty cool to be able to go back the next year and use that experience from the year before. But I just don't think my game was as good during that time as it was the year before. So I also struggled to hit fairways that week, which is kind of the one thing you got to do out there well. But, you know, it was another good experience, and definitely getting over the factor of the situation and everything around me was huge.
Well, also in 2016, you must have been on all cylinders, because you went absolutely crazy at St. Charles Country Club. Where you won the Illinois State Am, 28 under par. Is that right, for four rounds?
Yeah.
I've played that golf course a couple of times. Like, I'm not saying it's the hardest thing in the world, but it's, you know, you're not playing a nine-hole muni here. What kind of zone were you in that week, and how much did you end up winning that tournament by, and what was that week like to be? I mean, that is crazy good.
Yeah, no, I was in some other zone that week, but I won by 10 shots at 28 under, and I made a lot of putts, I'm telling you. My game was on fire. I just, you know, was driving it great. I think I birdied pretty much every par five, which there was 16 of them. So that's really the key. I birdied 16, you know, I went like 16 or 15 under the par fives, and then the rest of the holes, you know, I played great too, but taking care of the par fives was definitely key. And I just remember I made a lot of putts that week.
what was the worst round you had in shooting 28 under for four of them? Like 65 or something?
66. I went, that was the second round. I went 65, 66, 64, 65 or something like that.
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work. Like I said, it's not like I said, the impressive part is, you know, the people who are listening to this haven't played it. I mean, it's a legit country club. Like, it's not, you know, it's not 6,200 yards at a Muni. So that's, when I was kind of doing my research for this interview, I was like, I knew you won it, but I didn't know it was 28 under par for four rounds. So it's another level. The process of turning professional, when did you make that decision, and how did you come about it, and how did that process sort of play out?
Yeah, it's always been my dream to be a pro golfer. I think, you know, as the time has gone in my college career, I just kind of focused on the present and, you know, keep working towards that goal so that I could set myself up with opportunities, hopefully, my senior year. And I always knew that I wanted to stay 4 years in Illinois. That was never, you know, the question. But I just kind of kept on, you know, staying the course, working hard, staying in the present. And, you know, I think as time went by, I knew that I'd have options after my senior year.
What's the game plan for this summer once you turn pro? What places are you going to primarily play at? How many sponsors exemptions do you have sort of locked in at this point? So, you know, what's sort of the plan over the next couple, 2 or 3 months once you turn pro?
Yeah, you know, obviously any amateur who turns professional kind of is, you know, starts from scratch, doesn't really have any options. But, yeah, the one thing you got to do is hopefully get as many sponsors exemptions as you can. Right now, officially, I have two web.com ones. I have, obviously at Ivanhoe, and then later in the month, I will be at Springfield, Illinois, for the Lincoln Land Charity event. And besides that, I can't even tell you. I don't know how many exemptions I may have. I'm trying to play my way into some and weigh in some, so I don't know. But, you know, obviously, I'll be doing Monday qualifiers until school starts up in the fall.
John Deere giving exemption for this year?
I've not heard.
How many times have you played in that one?
Just once last year.
Just once. Did you enjoy that tournament and enjoy that golf
course? It's a great tournament. That's a tournament I love. I mean, hopefully one day when I'm, you know, looking back on it and top 10 in the world, I'll play that event every year. I mean, that's in my home state. It's a great golf course, and it's such a fun tournament.
I always tell people, like, if you really want to go to a tournament with a relaxed atmosphere on a really fun golf course to watch, because you guys can make some birdies out there, but it is a beautiful layout, and you're not fighting 9 million people to see the best players in the world play,
right,
go out there on a Thursday or Friday afternoon, and the ropes are pretty close to the players, it's a relaxed atmosphere, and you can watch world-class golf from 12 feet away and see how you guys actually take apart that golf course. It's a wonderful tournament.
It is such a great golf course. I mean, it obviously, you know, you'll see a lot of birdies out there, and it takes about 20 under to win that thing. But it's not like it's an easy golf course. It just has, I think, 3 par 5s, and it's, you know, a great layout, and it's always in fantastic condition, and it's a lush place.
Yeah, and like I said, from a fan standpoint, there's nothing, if you really want to see it up close, it's a wonderful place to kind of watch without having to be impeded by too big of crowds or whatnot, especially on those Thursdays and Fridays, to watch those guys take that golf course apart and how they really play it. It's my favorite tournament locally to go to. I love going out there to watch it. So it's good stuff.
I agree with you.
Are you going to have a full-time caddy with you when you turn pro? How's that going to sort of work out for you, or is it going to be a part-time basis of buddies you have that you're comfortable with on the bag?
Yeah, the past 5 summers, I've had the same buddy caddy for me in basically every amateur event. He's traveled with me all around, and his name's Eric Marcus. He's a friend of mine that I've had since I was 9 years old. We met when I was playing travel baseball. We were both playing travel baseball back in the day, and you know, he's going to caddy for me definitely to start out and see how it goes. I think Eric loves it, and he really wants to do it, and it's kind of funny. I just, one summer, one tournament, I just asked him to do it one time, and ever since then, stuck. So he came to both U.S. Opens with me. We have great experience with each other, and I think it's a great thing for me and him.
So he's on board for this journey. You guys are starting this off together, and
yep,
kind of going out there. That's awesome that you're going to have a guy that you're comfortable with, that you're not having, for lack of a better word, to substitute people in at different areas and whatnot. Yeah, I think it's a huge advantage to have that guy in the bag that you're comfortable with.
I agree.
Have you signed with a management group yet in that sort of process, or is that something you do after your amateur career is over?
Yeah, that's something I do after NCAAs. I can't sign with anybody or you know, even really talk to anybody. But yeah, that'll be done after NCAAs.
And same with a club deal or apparel deal, same thing. Once you turn pro,
club
then
deal,
you can...
Right when I turn pro, same thing.
Besides Coach Small, have you sought out any other advice on the process of, lack of a better word, becoming a professional, how to travel, where to stay, how do you work out during tournament weeks physically versus, you know, saving energy, stuff like that? Is there anybody else that you've really kind of picked their brain of how I need to go about this to be as efficient as I can?
Right, yeah. Besides Coach Small, I definitely talked to my former teammates and people who graduated from Illinois, like guys like Scott Langley, Luke Guthrie, Charlie Danielson, Thomas Dietrich, Thomas Peters, Brian Campbell. Really, those guys, I kind of have really picked their brain. And also D.A. Points, I've seen him around the past couple of years. You know, he's got tremendous experience too. So really the guys from Illinois and who I've seen over the course of the past couple of years, I always try to ask them questions about that. And, you know, really what I'm curious about is, you know, their practice schedule when they're home and, you know, how they handle their time and manage their time between certain things. I think it's pretty important when you become a professional.
And have you decided once you turn professional where your home base is going to be? And it, also, are you going to be finding a home club to play out of so you have the proper practice facilities that's going to take sort of get your game to that next level?
I'm going to live at home during the summers and in Northbrook. And then wintertime, I think I'm going to go down to Scottsdale and play and live there for those months. I think I have some options where to live. My caddy lives out there. His family moved out there. He's from, obviously from Northbrook, but his family moved out there. So they've offered me to stay there for the first year, which is pretty nice of them. But, you know, club-wise, I grew up playing public courses and, you know, doing that whole deal. But when I was 16, I got a youth membership, lucky enough to get a youth membership at the Mara Club in Libertyville, Illinois.
Yep.
It's a great golf
track.
Course and
absolutely.
Great place. And you know, I think I've been there for 6 years now. But, you know, I'll still be out there when I'm home. You know, I've got the Mara Club and you know, great. It's a great club. So many great members and ownership, the Getz family and Mr. Pieper, Don Pieper, he's a head pro and general manager out there. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have some, you know some great members out there too. And it's a great place.
So for Arizona, you're going to have to kind of figure that out once you're out there where your home base
would be
there.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get some help on, you know, where I can practice at and where I can play, but definitely looking into it already and hoping I can, you know, get lucky and find a spot or something, but find a place to play and practice. But definitely there's a lot of golf out there right now, so hopefully come that time I'll have it all set up.
Well, the next few questions I have are just sort of quick rapid fire, so whatever kind of comes to your brain, and there's no right or wrong answer, so I'll just kind of fire them off here at you. Three best golf courses in the Chicagoland area, architecturally.
I would go Olympia Fields, Butler National, and Shore Acres.
Best golfer you've ever played with in a high-end amateur event or a tour event that just impressed the living tar of how good they were talent-wise? If there is such a person that you were like, wow, that person really has that X gear or whatever it is.
My teammate, Dylan Meyer.
If you could pick three guys on the PGA Tour to play a fun round of golf with, maybe a little money game, go out to dinner afterwards, what three guys would you pick and what do you admire most about those players?
Tiger, Spieth, and Phil, because they're all competitive freaks and they love competing, and I think that's something I'd fit right into.
Lowest round you've ever shot?
62, 10 under at my home club. Mayor Club.
Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Honestly, I think I can just look back to my last tournament. I had some really good shots under pressure at Big Tens. I think, including the last tee shot on 18, it was a tough driving hole at Baltimore Country Club. Just OB straight down the left side of the fairway, and trees right, and I stepped up and hit a drive right down the middle, and I had 9-iron and 500-yard par 4. So that's the best tee shot, or the best shot I've hit recently.
The best golf shot you ever saw a competitor play, where you just were blown away of, A, the audacity to play it, and B, the talent it took to pull it off, where you were just like, I didn't see that. And it could be from college or even playing in PGA Tour events. Is there anything that comes to mind where you were just blown away by a shot?
Honestly, nothing comes directly to mind. I can't answer that, honestly. I honestly, nothing comes to mind, because I really only remember my shots.
Right,
yeah. As selfish as that sounds. But no,
sometimes guys, like, I've done a bunch of podcasts with PGA Tour players, and some guys, like, I don't know it. And every now and then it's like, and it's usually like Tiger or Phil is the answer. Like,
he was
stuck behind a tree and then slices a 4-iron, 40 yards. And I didn't even, I thought he's dead, and he hits the middle of the green with it. So I'll ask that one to you after a couple of years of being out there, then see if you see one that you just were.
Yeah, come back to me in a couple of years. Yeah.
My last one for you. Is there any other players in college you played with that the golf fans should be paying attention to because you think they'll be out there competing with you at a really high level at the PGA Tour at some point? Maybe some guys are slightly under the radar that you know that in the next 10 years you're going to be going head-to-head with them.
Well, one player that's really impressed me, I was teammates with him at the Palmer Cup last year, Norman Jung. He's very good. He's one player to watch out for, I think, coming at the next level. I think that's really, one that's definitely sticks out to me. Besides that, under the radar, I can't think of that another one, but Norman's a very good player, and I think he's very impressive. He impressed me very much.
Well, I really want to thank you for your time today, and I'll be out the Rust-Oleum. I'll be watching you for a few holes. You and TK Kelly are local guys. We got to give the support to. So, and then hopefully when you win it that week, you can come back on and let me know how that process was of getting your first win as a professional. I think that'd be a great follow-up to this.
Yeah, that would be. No doubt. I would definitely do that.
Well, we'll definitely see you out there. Thanks again for your time, and greatly appreciate it. And good luck with the last couple tournaments in college, and best of luck turning professional.
Thank you very much.